in the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter how many Instagram followers you got, everybody still needs to do the same if they want to see results. Be like, master your craft first. Secondly is, do not be afraid to ask, because if you don't ask, you'll never find out. Once you get over that fear of failing or rejection, then so much good stuff happens. The common misconception with a lot of girls is that if they lift weights, they're going to get big and bulky, or it's going to make them gain weight or whatever, and it's just not the case. So being able to see firsthand girls kind of buy into the fact that strength training is a good thing is really enjoyable. And you know, when we go and do these tours and stuff like that, you get hundreds of people at the workouts to come and train. When you see them all kind of in person, that's a pretty special experience as well.
Hi, and welcome to Outspoken, our first Under the Influence episode of 2020. You're joined as usual by journalists Amy and Sophie Tauber. And today we're excited to have Dan Kennedy on the show. Dan Kennedy is a powerhouse in the fitness world. The 26-year-old is a certified PT and strength and conditioning coach with a fresh and simple approach to wellness and fitness. With a thriving online coaching business and chart-topping podcast, Dan is making waves in the industry. Many know Dan as the trainer from hugely successful fitness juggernaut Keep It Cleaner, run by Steph Claire Smith and Laura Henshaw. We spoke to Dan about how he forged a name for himself in such a saturated market, his career-defining moments, and his top tips for fitness and training. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dan.
Pleasure.
Sophie
Pleasure.
Is a huge Kick fangirl, so I think she's in her element getting to ask you some training questions.
Yeah, I did one of your workouts yesterday, so.
Oh, I hope you saw today then.
I am.
So to kick us off, we wanted to find out more about your journey into the fitness world. Can you take us back to your school days when you were at Horsham, when you discovered the gym and basketball for the first time?
I started basketball at quite a young age, and it was always basketball and footy growing up while I was at school. And then it was probably at about, I think it was 15 or maybe just as I turned 16 that I went to the gym for the first time. So, you know, naturally I'm quite skinny, and playing sport growing up, I just had pretty much no muscle mass. So aerobically I was really good, but I was just kind of getting knocked around a bit easily. So I went to the gym for the first time, at around 15 or 16. And initially I absolutely hated it. I only went because I had to go. But then after, you know, a couple of months, I really fell in love with training and started seeing results. And like a lot of people that start going to the gym, I kind of got addicted to seeing progress and knowing that the work I was putting in was giving me the results that I wanted. And I kind of quickly fell in love with that. And then it just progressed from there, really. Like I kept playing footy and basketball all the way up until, I guess, the end of school. And by that point, I was right into the gym. I was doing, you know, a ton of my own research and stuff about training and nutrition. And I actually did my PT qualification separate to year 12 while I was in year 12. Just so I had that as well. And then I got to the end of school and had to pick footy or basketball, and I actually picked for the first time ever, I chose footy over basketball and was going to give basketball a miss. And then within about a day of making that decision, I got asked to move to Melbourne for basketball, so that decision changed again pretty quickly. And within about a week I was living in Melbourne. So a lot's happened since then, but that's kind of, I guess, how it all started anyway.
And when you were training at the Australian College of Basketball, you suffered an ankle injury, I believe, and that turned out to be a pretty defining moment in your career.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, like anyone that knows me knew that kind of all the way up until that point, basketball and footy to an extent was literally all I did. So for 2 years after year 12, I was here at the Australian College of Basketball, and we were training, you know, anywhere between kind of 2 to 4 hours a day, most days of the week, and pretty much just living like a professional athlete, but not getting paid to do it. So we're studying at the same time, and obviously my goal was to do something with basketball and eventually finish up my 2 years here, and then play somewhere, get paid to play somewhere, and keep kind of building on my basketball game. And at the end of the 2 years, I found out I needed an ankle reconstruction, which at the time was quite devastating and kind of a bit depressing. Like I went from just living and breathing basketball to not doing any of it at all for or not doing anything at all, really, for a fair period of time. And you know, everything happens for a reason. It was a blessing in disguise that, you know, started personal training full time pretty much as soon as I could start walking again. And then I had a few setbacks with the ankle, so that made me actually make a decision to stop playing, which was a big decision at the time, and focus on building up a career in the fitness industry. And then and then just went from there, did a number of different things after that. I ended up doing some physique competing and all different types of things that I'd never had the time or the chance to do while I was pretty much doing full-time basketball. So yeah, at the time it was very, very, very disappointing and a massive change, but it all worked out for the best.
And talking about the bodybuilding, for those, I suppose, who've never actually competed or in that way, how difficult is it to get your body to that end result?
Yeah, look, it's hard. It's the thing I liked about it is that it all comes down to you. Like, if you put in the work, you'll see the results. If you don't put in the work, then you're the only one that you have to blame for not seeing the progress and the results that you're after. And that's what I liked about it. I'd come from playing, obviously, all team sports where no matter how much work you put in, it's not always up to you. The result's not always up to you. So going to more of an individual sport, I guess you'd call it, where it comes down to how disciplined you are with not only the training, but obviously what you put in your mouth as well. So the nutrition side of things is definitely the hardest part. I really enjoy training, so I would never say that training was the hard part to stick to. Definitely the hard sessions, but that's the enjoyable bit. But you know, and I think a lot of people, when they hear the term bodybuilding in particular, think of someone absolutely huge. Like, anyone that's seen me, quite clearly I am not huge, but I built up a big foundation of doing strength training for a long period of time, and my goal was to basically just look as lean and athletic as, and you know, as muscular as I possibly could in these shows. And I usually give myself between kind of 12 to 20 weeks to get ready for these, and it'd be extremely disciplined. Like, not so much what I was eating, but just the specific amounts and how structured my training was and how disciplined I was with, you know, getting enough sleep and drinking water and all that type of stuff. So there's a lot that comes into play with the end result. But it is an awesome challenge, and you definitely learn a lot about yourself in that period of time. And it's very, very challenging, not only physically, but particularly mentally as well.
And going back to your business, you have built an incredible client base over the years with not only sports stars, but models, influencers. Who are some of the biggest names that you work with at the moment?
At the moment, well, obviously I'm doing the Keep It Cleaner app at the moment. So in terms of influencers and stuff, working with Steph Claire-Smith and Laura Henshaw. Athletes-wise, I've done a lot with footy players over the years, guys like Guy Heppel and Scotty Pendlebury and Tom McDonald and a few other AFL athletes. Basketballers, I'm good mates with Mitch Creek, which I know you guys will know that name quite well, being in Adelaide. So Creeky and I have done a little bit together, and even Shawnee Bruce from Horsham. But other guys like Michael Klim, obviously a very successful Olympian, currently working with Dylan Alcott, who just won the 2020 Australian Open wheelchair tennis. And yeah, I've been pretty fortunate with being able to work with not so much high profile people, I guess, because everyone's exactly the same in the end of the day. Like, it doesn't matter how many Instagram followers you got, everybody still needs to do the same if they want to see results. But I've just been lucky to work with good people, like people that are just genuinely enjoyable to get to know. And in terms of working with athletes, it's fun because people, they are so specific with what their goal is, and you know they'll do exactly what you ask them to do. And it's fun to see that pay off. Like, for example, watching Dylan win the Open on the weekend after, you know, training together and seeing how much he's improved, that's definitely the rewarding part of the job.
Oh, he's incredible. I mean, there's obviously so many big names there. How did you actually get some of those people on board? Because I'm sure, you know, when you're first starting out, it's probably difficult to just pick up the phone and be like, hey, Steph Claire-Smith, do you want to just come into the gym? So if there's other people out there who are, I suppose, aspiring to be trainers like yourself, what would be your advice to getting some of those people on board?
Yeah, I guess my advice would be, well, firstly, you just have to become extremely good at what you do. So it doesn't matter, like the names, obviously it's enjoyable, like you said, training these types of people, but if you're not good at what you do, then they're not going to come to you anyway. So the first thing is you just need to focus on actually mastering your craft so that you have a reason for them to come to you in the first place. You know, even guys like someone who's one of my good mates now, Mitch Orble, like I remember he put up a post on social media asking for someone help with nutrition. And I got tagged in it. So I just messaged him. And, you know, for me, it was nothing to do with the fact that he had an Instagram following. It was the fact that I just genuinely wanted to help. I messaged him and said, hey, mate, I'd love to help you get results. And that's it. And he said, yep, like I didn't mention anything about, you know, I want you to tag me on Instagram or any of that stuff. We got in results and he actually said to me at the start, he's like, yeah, I'll tag you in a post on Instagram and stuff. And I said to him, like, that's not what I'm after. Like, if you see results and that's what you want to do, then that's what you do. But, you know, I've never, ever kind of worked with these people purely for the fact that they have a profile. So the first thing, like I said, would be like master your craft first. Secondly is do not be afraid to ask, because if you don't ask, you'll never find out. I said this on a podcast the other day where, you know, people are worried to ask a certain person if they want to train with them or if they can help them out for free because they're worried they'll say no. But even if they say no, you're in the exact same position already because they're still not working with them. So you're in the same position as you would be if you failed. So once you get over that fear of failing or rejection, then so much good stuff happens. Like the amount of opportunities I've been lucky to have, and I wouldn't even call it luck, it's just pure, like, the amount of times that I've kind of asked certain things and they've come through, which would never have happened if I hadn't been scared of rejection or scared of failure, then it just wouldn't happen. You know, what's another good example? And the other part of this as well is that you shouldn't be doing it for the purpose of the fact that these are high profile people. Like, in the end of the day, they're the same as everybody else. And something that I think's worked in my favor is that I've never reached out to people and said, you know, I want you to pay me X, Y, and Z to do this. Or like I said, I've never asked for social media posts or whatever. A lot of the time, you're going to be willing to give up your time and give up your advice, your best advice and value for free. Like, I will say to someone, you know, I'd love to help you out just to get results, and that's it. And if they see results and they want to come back, then they come back and you build a relationship and you go from there. And then after that, it's obviously a bit of a ripple effect. You start to build up a bit of a reputation, or you build up a network of people in the similar circles, and it becomes a bit easier. But definitely at the start, it's just about reaching out and asking, even with the podcast, like, you know, even with you guys asking about this podcast, like, you reached out and here we are, we're doing it. If you hadn't have asked, then we wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, that's such good advice. I think sometimes, I totally agree, people are too scared to ask the question. I'm going to ask the question. I'm not going to ask you to train us, but I'm going to ask you to throw potentially some of your clients under the bus. Are there any funny stories you can think of that our audience might like to hear? Maybe the Kit
maybe
Girls.
Or Mitch story. Yeah, Mitch Creek story. We could stitch him up here.
Funny stories. There's plenty of them.
no pressure here.
Oh, there's too much pressure. You put me on the spot here. what's it called? I actually don't know. There's too many of them. There's been plenty of. I'm going to be very disappointing. I actually don't have any real funny stories to share. But they're definitely some of the funnier people to train is by far guys like Mitch Orville and even Will Sparks. Like, him and I have had plenty of sessions together. Here in Australia, but even we went over and went kind of toured with him for a couple of weeks over in Greece last year. And he's just a very, very, very funny person to be around. Guys like Clemmy, he's always great fun to hang out with. And then obviously, you know, you girls have obviously seen a lot of the Kick stuff. Anytime you're doing any workout or basically anything around Laura, something funny happens. It's quite bizarre, but it is she's quite funny to film with. Most of the workouts we film for Kick. I don't even know what we're doing with the workout by the time we finish, because she's talking about something that nobody has any idea what she's talking about. But it's quite funny. Yeah, so I'm gonna have to disappoint you there. I don't actually have any great stories. But yeah, I am lucky to work with some people that are
And as I did tell you before, I am a Kit Girl and do follow your program religiously. How do you feel that you're helping to inspire so many young women out there to get into fitness and also strength training?
Oh, I love it. I was initially working with Laura on some strength training, which is funny because now she barely does any strength training. But I was training her before the Kick program started, and she asked if I'd be interested in joining with her and Steph, and obviously said yes. The opportunity sounded great, and since then it's obviously just kind of just grown and grown. And you know, knowing now that the workouts get out to so many people, because that's my whole goal with my business, whether it be online or with the PT staff or my podcast, is just to try and add value and help as many people as I possibly can. So being able to reach such a large audience, and in particular with it being female, and a lot of the time girls that have actually, like you said, never really done strength training or even done any training really. So to be able to have an impact on them, and I get a lot of messages or emails and stuff from girls that are doing the program that like the strength training side of things and want to learn a bit more about it, which is awesome for me, because it's obviously that's the part I enjoy the most is the resistance and strength training side of it. So being able to get messages from people saying, you know, particularly girls, because I guess the common misconception with a lot of girls is that if they lift weights, they're going to get big and bulky, or it's going to make them gain weight or whatever, and it's just not the case. So being able to see firsthand girls kind of buy into the fact that strength training is a good thing is really enjoyable. And, you know, when we go and do these tours and stuff like that, and you get hundreds of people at the workouts to come and train, when you see them all kind of in person, that's a pretty special experience as well.
Definitely. And you have such a strong online presence. You've obviously got your podcast, which is hugely successful, and your Instagram platform and YouTube. Was social media a big part of your business strategy in growing your PT and obviously your online courses?
Yeah, for sure. Without a doubt, my business would not be anywhere near where it is today without particularly Instagram. But also the podcast. The podcast has been amazing. I'm so glad I started it when I did. It's brought about so many opportunities. But Instagram, like, I by far don't have the biggest following, but what I've remained consistent with the whole way through ever since I started is just trying to provide some form of value pretty much every single post as often as possible. So just being really consistent with it, and it's taken a long time, but it is starting to pay off, and a lot more people are starting to see the content, which is awesome. It's helping more people, but just the brand awareness and being able to reach people that you wouldn't be able to reach otherwise is just huge. So like I said, the Instagram for me at the moment, particularly Instagram stories over the past 12 to 18 months, I just put a lot of time into not particularly making good content for stories, but just documenting what I do with clients and putting in random stuff about nutrition or programs or whatever. The podcast is great, being able to reach an audience through audio. As you touched on, I did a bit with YouTube, which I enjoyed it. I think it was pretty effective. It was had a bit of impact. It's a lot harder unless you've got a huge following on YouTube. It's a lot of time that goes into making the videos, but it was definitely enjoyable. And then for me as well, my email list, I love being able to communicate with people via email consistently, because you just build up more of a relationship and you can get responses from people that probably wouldn't particularly message back, you know, or comment on an Instagram post because they're worried about what other people are going to say or whatever it is. So it's a bit more personal with the email and podcast to an extent, because people start to feel like they build up a better relationship and more trust with you, which is fun. But yeah, so social media has definitely been a huge influence on my business, a positive one.
Well, talking about social media, I'd love to hear your take on TikTok. Are you a fan, or are you just, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's like, to be perfectly honest, I don't necessarily like it, it's just not the type of content that I would put together. So that's the only reason I don't like it per se. It's definitely not going anywhere, and it's definitely growing a lot. I think there's a lot of potential for it to do extremely well. And you know, I've played around with it a little bit. I've put some content on there. Like I said, a lot of my stuff coming from Instagram anyway is very informative and not so much for entertainment, which TikTok is
definitely a more of an entertainment app. So I think the creative side of things, if you're a creative person, then TikTok is awesome for you. And obviously the younger population are doing really well with it in terms of engagement and stuff. But because it's so new still, even though it has been out for a while, it's still so new. So it's kind of like what Instagram was when it first started to get popular. So the potential for it to grow now is massive. And just like Instagram, just like Facebook and even Snapchat to an extent, regardless of whether you like it or not, it's definitely not going anywhere. So if your goal is to do well with business, if your goal is to do well with reaching a larger audience, then you kind of have to suck it up and at least have a go at it. And otherwise you'll fall behind. Like there's just no kind of two ways about it. I was talking to someone about this the other day. I think it was my dad, actually. We're talking about phones. Everybody's on their phones now. And although it may not necessarily be a good thing and people may not like the fact that you walk around and literally everybody's like zombies on their phones, it's just not going to change. That's not going to go away anytime soon. Like pretty much your whole life is on your phone. And if you're just purposely not using or you're purposely avoiding using these apps and stuff like that, and you have a business or you have the goal of reaching a larger audience, then you'd be silly to avoid it. So very long answer to that question, but yeah, TikTok is, I can't see it going anywhere. Yeah, it definitely is getting popular, and I'll just keep putting out content on it and see what happens.
Are we going to see any dances or sort of mining?
Zero chance. Absolutely zero chance.
Now, we have a predominantly female audience, so we thought we'd finish off the episode by picking your brain on a few health and fitness questions. So the first one is, at the moment it seems like it's all about glutes for young women. Is it all about that Kim K bum?
That's
is that
right,
what you're trying
all
to
the
say
Steph
so
versus bum. Yeah, so are there any tips that you would give for the most effective ways to train your glute?
Yeah, well, to answer that, like probably the most important thing before you even worry about training them is making sure that you can put them in a position to actually work when you train. So many people have underactive and lazy glutes, and that is mainly because of the fact that hip flexors are so tight. So our hips are so tight, we spend so much time sitting down throughout the day or in a position where we're shortening our hip flexor muscles and even around the side of our hips with TFLs. So the first thing I always do before any lower body session, and you would have seen this in the kick app as well, is try and mobilize the hips. So stretching the hip flexors, doing release work through the hips to bring our pelvis back to a position that when we train, we can actually use the glutes properly. Because a lot of the time that people get this lower back pain or even knee pain and stuff like that, it's because we are not utilizing our glutes and hamstrings enough. So that'd be the first part. And then other than that, I'm a big, big fan of activating glutes first using bands with things like crab walks and hip thrusts, even kind of clamshells and all those different types of activation exercises. But after that, it's you've got to understand that the lifts that have been in like every program since gym like workouts became popular, there's a reason why these exercises are still in there. So things like squats, deadlifts, hip thrusts, step ups, lunges, all these main exercise that everybody's heard of before, the reason that in every program is because they work. So it's all well and good to see these fancy exercises you'll see on Instagram or exercises that look really cool, but they're not the ones that are going to help you build your glutes the most. Like to this day, the lifts that I think are going to help you build your glutes the most are squats, without a doubt. Deadlifts in particular, I love sumo deadlifts because they make you use your glutes a lot more. Barbell hip thrusts, or even just hip thrusts using a plate or band, whatever you'd like there. Some form of lunge variation, so either a reverse lunge, a Bulgarian split squat or something like that, are fantastic. But the key is like the way to build any muscle is to overload it over time. So, just doing a heap of body weight squats, although it may puff you out and make you feel like you're getting a bit stronger, in the end of the day, you're going to kind of reach your cap in terms of how much you can actually grow your glutes doing that. So the key is to get stronger over time, whether that's more reps, more weight, more sets, whatever it is, but stick to those big exercises that you know work, and just be consistent with it. And don't be afraid to lift weight. If girls are listening, don't be afraid to actually lift weights. It's not going to make you big and bulky. it's going to give you the shape and the strength that you've always wanted, and the reason why you're probably going to the gym in the first place.
That's some great advice. What about in terms of diets? Because a lot of people say, oh, I'm flexible eating and diet plan, everything. What would you say the biggest mistakes are when, I suppose, women do flexible dieting?
When they do it?
Yeah, like do they overindulge or...
I think the biggest misconception with flexible dieting straight up is people think that that's just a license to eat as much crap as you can as long as it fits within your calorie intake. But you're pretty, you know, you'll work out pretty quickly. That's just not how it works. So I'm a big advocate for allowing 80 to 90% of your calorie intake to come from nutrient-dense whole foods. That's the stuff that's going to give you, you know, it's going to be best for your skin. It's going to be best for recovery, your mood, your hormones, all that type of stuff. So it's like a sports car. If you feed it crappy fuel, it's not going to run its best. If you give it the fuel that it needs, like a high quality fuel, it's going to perform at its best. It's the same as our body. So the mistakes, like I said, is just trying to eat as much crap as you can or avoiding foods that you know are good for you. So I think it's really important to fuel your body properly, but also allow that 10 to 20% of calories for food and even drink that you may typically kind of crave, whether that be a glass of wine at dinner, whether that be some ice cream before bed, or it could just be having milk with your coffee, things like that. Like it doesn't mean that you need to purposely try and eat crappy food. It just means that you have literally the flexibility, as the name would suggest, to eat the way that you want and still see results. Because in the end of the day, it doesn't come down to what you're eating. It comes down to how much you're eating, and that's just science. That's one of the main things that I've really worked on with my nutrition knowledge over the years, is to try and figure out exactly how to lose body fat and how to gain weight, all that type of stuff. And that's as simple as it gets. If you're burning more energy than you're taking in, regardless of what it is that you're eating, you will lose body fat. And if you're consistently taking in more than what you're burning, then you'll gain weight.
And you mentioned drinks. If someone's looking to lose weight, would you say you need to cut them out altogether? Or
do you mean like alcoholic drinks?
Oh, sorry, alcoholic drinks, yes. Alcohol. Is that the sort of first thing you think people should get rid of if they're trying to sort of lean down?
You can definitely lose fat still drinking alcohol. I don't think you don't need to cut it out. It's not necessary to cut it out completely. But what I would be looking at is that if you are a relatively heavy drinker, or you're somebody that drinks quite often, then you've got to keep in mind that a lot of your calorie intake is coming from those drinks. So if you know that, you know, majority of your calories are coming from drinks and you're not willing to drop down your food to an extent where you're still in a deficit, then it'd be a wise idea to reduce the amount you're drinking. But, you know, if it's just a couple of drinks here and there, it does not make a difference as long as it fits within your intake. So, you know, even when I was doing the physique shows, like I remember one of them, it was my sister's 21st. She's not even 21. 18th. Sorry. It was her 18th birthday, the week before one of my competitions. And we went out for dinner and like I got a couple of glasses of wine literally a week before my show.
Wow.
I just made sure that I worked the rest of my day around the fact that I was going to do that and accounted for it. And, you know, the next day I didn't feel bad. I didn't try and make up for it by doing a heap of cardio or anything like that. It's just, you've got to keep in mind that, like I said, there's no such thing as good and bad food. If you're taking in too many calories, which the chances are you probably are if you're drinking a lot, then you will not lose body fat. But if it's just a few here and there and you're accounting for it, then you've got nothing to worry about.
And lastly, what are some of your top tips on finding motivation to train?
Having a very specific and clear goal in mind and keeping yourself, staying aligned with what that goal is and revisiting that as often as possible, because it's easy to, you know, we actually talked about this on the Kick podcast the other day. It's easy to sit down on Jan 1st and write down goals and then never look at them again until December 31st. But if you're constantly making yourself aware of what these goals are and figuring out the small steps you need to take to achieve those goals, then the likelihood of sticking to them is a lot higher. So to stay motivated, I think if you've constantly got your goal in your mind, then it's going to be a lot more likely. And another thing is to keep yourself accountable. So find a training partner, find somebody that you have to be accountable towards, whether that be a friend, whether that be a family member, your loved one, whoever it is, whether that be yourself. You know, if you're just so used to never following through with the goal and sticking to it, stay accountable to yourself. Make sure you achieve what you set out to do. Other than that, in terms of motivation, I think it just has to be your. If it's not your goal, if it's just a goal that everybody else is doing and you think that that's what you need to do, then you'll never be motivated. I honestly think that if the goal means enough to you, then you'll always be motivated. Yeah, there'll be days where you probably don't feel like doing it as much as the other days, but that purpose will always be there, and that's what's going to drive you to do it. And if it's not, then it's probably not that important to you in the first place. That's my opinion anyway. Like, I've always been quite lucky in terms of being pretty self-motivated and never really having to have anyone to push me along. Obviously, I appreciate it when people do, but I'm more than capable of keeping myself motivated. But I'm a big believer in if it does mean enough to you, then you won't need someone there holding your hand.
That's so true. God, I feel like hitting the gym after speaking
to
you.
Yeah, I'm motivated now.
and lastly, I guess we just wanted to find out what you've got planned for 2020. Is it going to be a big year for you?
Yeah, every year is a big year. I'm really looking forward to it. I just want to continue to build on that number, the amount of people that I'm able to impact with the podcast, social media, and my online coaching. I really want to continue to grow my presence online, and purely for the purpose of being able to help out more people, you know, with the Keep It Cleaner stuff, that's going to continue to grow as well. So hopefully reach more girls and help more girls get into the gym for the first time and start lifting some weights and really start to build up some confidence and self-esteem. And like I said, just for me, it's just impact. So the more I can do, the better. I'm trying to do as much as I possibly can. So everything always works out for the best, and everything happens for a reason. So we'll just see what happens in 2020.
Great. Well, we'll definitely leave a link below in our show notes to your podcast so our listeners can check it out. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the episode. If you did enjoy it, we'd love if you could share it on your Instagram. And please remember to tag us at outspoken_the_podcast. And if you could leave us a review, we'd really love to read it.